is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 34 of Art for Your Ear. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery, offering original art by independent artists from around the world. Now, today's artist made me work a little bit. She said no at least two or three times, and then rescheduled twice. She was so nervous to do this. I even told her she could drink through the whole thing, but she still dodged my calls. Well, I'm not sure how I did it, but I finally got Boston-based painter Leah Giberson to show up. Her paintings of houses, campers, and forgotten lawn chairs are just so beautifully boring, which is why I included her work in a show that I curated titled exactly that. More on that later. Anyway, let's not waste any more time. If I'm late calling, she might use that as an excuse not to pick up. Here we go, calling Boston. Hi, Leah.
Hey, Danielle.
Yay! I have somehow managed to convince you to do this.
I can't say no to you.
Well, you did for quite a
while.
Well,
I did. And then, yeah. And
you actually said no several times. So you can't say that you can't say no to me because you said no several times. And then I just kept chipping away and here you are.
You did. Who do I blame?
My tenacity?
Yes, probably.
No, I really wanted to have you on because I love your work so much. And I was lucky enough to spend a little bit of time with you it's not even last year because now it's 2016. But at the end of 2014, we got to see each other in San Francisco. And before that, our little art show in Chattanooga.
Oh, that was the best.
That was so fun.
That was such a high point. Seriously. That was so much fun. The work looked incredible together. And then just, it felt like a magical few days.
It really did. It was so much fun. And Samantha French was there too, which was cool. I wish Holly Farrell had been able to come, but then Mark Bradley Shoup. And it was just such a little bubble.
I loved it.
Me too.
I really did.
And that was the first time we actually ever met in person.
I know. It was, and it's same, yeah. And that was the first time I met Sam in person. And Mark, and it felt like I had already, it was one of those things where it felt like we already knew each other and then we met in person.
Totally. And the work, you're right. The work totally, it was one of the most beautiful shows ever. I loved every piece in it. And what I loved so much about that trip, well, first of all, I'd never been to Chattanooga and I was surprised.
Which is a great place.
I had never been there. Yeah, I loved it. And now, like, I keep on talking to people from Chattanooga. I'm like, clearly, the universe is telling me I need to go back. But one of my favorite things was hanging out with you guys, and we'd be driving to, like, lunch or to wherever. And we would have to randomly pull over because there would be an awesome truck that you needed to take a picture of, or like an abandoned trailer that just had to be photographed so that you could, you know, use it as in a painting. Is that
and
your
you
life?
Guys were so patient and accommodating.
I actually took photos of you taking photos of the stuff.
Those trucks.
Because I was like, there's Leah Giberson in action, everybody.
Yeah. My family probably gets a little tired of it because pretty much like, and I'm the one who drives usually, so I'll be driving along and, hold on, seatbelts.
And so is there a particular thing, like, because campers, you've done a lot of campers.
Yeah, and before campers, it was mostly, like, little houses, and little houses still call out to me. There's just, it's one of these things, it's a combination of something about the composition grabs me, or the colors, or just the object itself. And a lot of these things, I mean, obviously with the shiny trailers, those are not overlooked by anybody, whether you're into trailers or not, they're, you know, glamorous looking. But before I got into the shiny stuff, it was the little ones that really got me. They were almost like little short stories, like quiet short stories that just called out to me. And
that's such a nice way to put it.
I felt like if I could paint them, you know, people would listen and pay attention.
Yeah, they'd get the story too. Yeah, they are very narrative because there's no people in there, but you instantly wonder who lives there.
Exactly. And what happens inside.
Yeah.
With almost, the chairs are different, but with the houses and the trailers, I think they have a lot in common with each other, and they're both kind of shelters, and there's an inside outside, And I almost always stay pretty much on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little, like maybe a door's open here or there, or just a glimpse into the kind of private space inside.
Uh-huh. That's
but
so
that
nice.
Part really, really interests me too.
I wonder if, well, do you, everything that you paint sort of has a vintage feel.
Yeah.
And so is that, like, were those the houses that you grew up looking at, or is there like, did it remind you of a grandparent's house, or what do you think the draw is to all that vintage stuff?
Yeah, it's, well, so first of all, they're not houses that I grew up in. I grew up in a pretty, I don't even know how to describe it. My parents were hippies and artists, craftspeople, and everything was very homemade, do-it-yourself, asymmetrical.
Wasn't there a big barn out back that was like basically a studio?
Yeah, my parents turned they built a barn on a foundation. Well, they built a studio on a barn foundation.
Okay.
When I was a toddler. And so that became where my dad's a glassblower, and that was the hot glass shop, the cold glass shop, blacksmithing. Upstairs, there was woodworking, pottery. My mom was doing weaving for a while. So there was an enormous loom and jewelry making area.
Wow.
Any kind of anything that we or they wanted to make, we would figure out a way to do that. So I just, that seemed like a normal thing. Until I went to school with, mostly in middle school, but I think middle school kids just, no matter what, they think their parents are weird.
Yeah.
So now that I have had kids go through middle school,
yeah.
Have the perspective. But I do remember, you know, when I got to middle school, I met people who were from kind of more put together looking homes. And I also, my parents both grew up in kind of suburban areas. And whenever we would go visit my grandparents, those houses seemed, they just seemed like what houses are supposed to look like. And,
right.
You know, the lawns were mowed and there, I don't know, things were put away at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And
there's something very comforting about that.
Yeah, kind of mm-hmm. security and predictability. And it seemed like they became, these kind of houses kind of became sort of like a fairy tale to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm sure that, so like when we'd go visit my grandmother, we'd get to watch much more TV than we normally would. And we'd like binge watch the Brady Bunch. and that just, that was such a foreign world, but it looked like
great.
Yeah.
I know.
And I would just like drool over it. It just, oh, it looked so normal. And you know,
that's like, so funny. And so did you, like, growing up in that sort of hippie art thing, yeah. Did you partake in it? Like, were you making stuff too from the get-go?
Oh yeah. Oh,
like
yeah.
It didn't occur to you not to, because that was your normal.
Exactly. And so, and really whenever, you know, people will often ask, when did you think you were an artist or realize you were an artist? And at least in our family, it was kind of like, it just was always there. Mm-hmm. It was just the way we were raised. And I mean, my parents made it very clear we're all artists, you know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, I think there's a difference. As I grew up, I realized there was a difference between practicing, you know, being a working artist, or, you know, and there's certainly there's a variation in terms of how much time you spend in a studio. And then there's all these other questions that happen, like, oh, where do you show and do you sell your work? And, you know, there's
right.
Artist is just one part of the answer. But.
And so did you think from the beginning, like, did you think that this would be your career?
No, no, no. When I was a kid, it just was something that we always did.
Mm-hmm.
But my sisters and I all wanted to do other, like go in other directions.
How many of you are there? There are three of you?
I'm the oldest of three.
Yeah. And so what did you guys want to do?
I, Well, for a while, I wanted to be an architect. That was kind of the big thing. For a little while, I wanted to be a lawyer, but I realized that was just not. I'm not really sure what that was about.
That was your rebellious phase.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to wear suits with shoulder pads.
Absolutely. And,
yeah.
And actually, in with my mom, even now, like one of the ways that she kind of assesses a person, she'll look at their hands, and if they're really soft and manicured, she kind of loses interest. But if they look rugged and like they, like it's a maker's hand, like if it looks like they produce things with their hands, that they make things and create things, then that impresses her.
That's
she doesn't care how much money somebody makes, or, you know, she just wants to know that they create.
That's pretty awesome, because in our, like, we're the, you know, around the same age, and in our generation, there were a lot of parents that were like, no, go to university, get a practical job, you know, get a pension. And being an artist was like cuckoo.
Right.
You know, and it's so cool that your parents value it oppositely.
Yeah. In fact, there's like almost there for a while I was, well, I went to Oberlin first, and then it's a long kind of road, but had a baby. Then I went back and finished my undergrad at Mass Art. And my parents were thrilled that I was going to art school.
Yeah. And, that's a rare situation where a parent is like, yes, art school.
Back on track.
That's right.
But then I got a job. Well, it was around like the mid 90s when I went back to school, and the internet was just taking off. And it was very easy back then to get hired in, you know, really whatever job, internet related, if you had the interest, you could get hired.
Mm-hmm.
My mom especially was just sort of bewildered when I started on this art director path. I mean, it was still art related, but it was very corporate and doing, you know, websites for big behemoth companies.
That's exactly what I did.
Yeah. And she, you know, she says she wasn't judgmental, but I could tell that when I finally left all of that, she was like, yes.
And so how did that happen? How did you go from being an art director, building giant websites to, I mean, you're a full-time, full deal artist.
Well, part of it, there's a couple of different things. One thing is that there was this, I was starting to get this kind of lingering, uneasy feeling, and a kind of anxiety about it, because as I would work on my portfolio, and like whenever it was time to do the dreaded overhaul of my portfolio, there were so many things that seemed already obsolete. You know, it's like there were
your design portfolio, you mean?
That either the design was no longer, you know, because web design really evolved quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some things that made sense in the mid 90s, but then by the early 2000s, were already so dated.
I know.
It's so embarrassing to show.
Yeah.
Actually, it was full on embarrassing to show some of the stuff that I did early on. And then there was also this feeling that things were just evaporating. Things I had created and worked hard on were kind of evaporating without a trace, really. They were losing relevance, and they also, you couldn't hold them. You had to have a device. You had to have a device with the right software to really see them in the right way. And so there was that kind of underneath, you know, those feelings of like just not being really satisfied with the legacy of what I was working on.
I feel like I'm listening to a recording of myself back to myself.
Yeah,
that's exactly how I felt too. It was so weird. Like my entire portfolio existed in the ether.
Yes.
And if a server went down, everything I had made was gone. I hadn't had paint under my nails or ink from a printing press under my nails in a decade. And I was like, I couldn't hold anything that I'd made in like 10 or 15 years.
Yes. And, you know, one person might, if they had the right setup, might be able to do it. But basically, it was just evaporating, disappearing. Yeah. So I was, during that time, I was part of a couple different groups, and I can't take credit for being part of either of them. I was invited by artists into both of them, and they really became, being involved with those groups really became a kind of lifeline to continuing to make art, even during the times that I was mostly doing these doing website design, basically.
Mm-hmm. And you had little kids at the time too, didn't you?
Well, so my oldest is now 24.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And I met him and he's lovely.
Yes. And he actually went to MassArt and graduated from the same painting program with the same instructor.
Wow.
In any case, so he was, when I went back to school, he was four. He was 4 years old. And then soon after I graduated, my daughter Lily was born. And so when I was doing the website stuff, I had like a baby and she, you know, I probably did that until she was about two.
Mm-hmm.
And then I switched to freelance, which at least gave me a balance so I could work on, I could work really intensely on, it was still website stuff, but I could work really intensely as a freelancer and then, you know, work on my personal projects.
And so at that same time, so you've got a little one, you've got your freelancing and you're participating in these groups.
Yes. And they would have, because I need deadlines, they would, periodically, like, so one of the groups was a crit group and we would meet at a different artist's studio each month. And so when it was my turn, that was a deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And there were eight of us in the group. So it only really happened about once a year that I would be accountable.
Mm-hmm.
But that, when, if I hadn't had that, there were times that it would have been very easy for a year to go by. You know, when you have work deadlines and, you know, clients wanting things, and kids needing stuff, mm-hmm. it's really easy for the creative stuff to really be neglected.
Yeah, bottom of the list.
Yeah. So those groups really helped me tremendously.
Was it all women?
The crit group was all women. The other group started right after I graduated from MassArt, and that was put together by a woman named Kathleen Battetti, and she hand-selected a group of emerging artists, many of which were just graduating from MassArt. Some were graduating from the museum school just down the street at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. And we would meet once a month, and she would introduce us to gallery owners in Boston. She would introduce us to she'd have artists come and talk to us. It was kind of a group set up to help emerging artists kind of learn how to make a living as an artist, to make a career out of it.
That is the most fantastic thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
How they many didn't of you really did she pick?
That. Oh, I don't remember now. I feel like it was maybe around 10 people.
Wow.
And we had such varied backgrounds, but that was incredible.
How did you feel being in that group? Were you like, what the hell am I doing in here? Or were you like,
a lot of times I did, I felt like, ooh, I have like a corporate job and I'm not,
I bet everybody in that group felt exactly the same way.
Yeah, I think everyone had their own issues. But part of it was that each of us, so it was a 2-year commitment, and each of us would get a solo show at one point during the 2 years. So I had my solo show when I was 8 months pregnant with Lily.
Oh my God.
And
what did you do? What was your work like?
So most of the work in that show, I used baby clothes, and the work looked nothing at all like anything that I do now. But I used old baby clothes, mostly just these kind of cotton, very simple cotton shirts and onesies, and glued them down to panels and made these kind of very, the palette was very pale and subtle. I was still at that point very afraid of color.
Oh my God. Not anymore.
But they were sort of abstracted paintings, but with the baby clothing as the, I always need some kind of first step. Mm-hmm. Like a blank canvas is just terrifying and uninspiring to me. Mm-hmm. So the baby clothing was what I put down first. And then my painting was in response to that.
Wow. And so how did you get from baby clothes to, you have such a distinctly, you can recognize your work instantly. How did you get from that to what you're doing now?
First of all, I'll say that I've always used imagery, sort of a mixed media collage approach with imagery, starting with kind of a collage, some kind of found image or found object. And then sometimes early on, I would add paint as well. Mm-hmm. And actually, I was in the painting department at Mass Art, and it was almost the paint part of what I did was just sort of an afterthought because I was still so scared of paint. I felt
again,
so clumsy.
Hello, me.
I have a cat on my lap.
Can you hear my dog?
Good.
I think. I know. I put some soothing jazz on for them, but it's doing nothing. So go on.
Right, this is a very long way of answering your question, but I was really thinking a lot about memory and time passing and the way we, tell stories to our children and remember events ourselves. And I started using my own photography or video stills as the first image to start a piece with. Mm-hmm. And then I just started, as I would go through my days, I would take lots of photos of things, and I was really then paying attention to these kind of ordinary moments that might be overlooked, and trying to then just really listen to what, it's hard to describe it, to what they had to say.
No, I totally get it. Like when you look at your work and listen to what you're saying, like it completely makes sense because everything that you do, they're so mundane.
Yeah.
And so beautiful, which is why I put them in the beautifully boring show, because they're so beautifully boring and you can rush right by them. But if you stop and look, like, an old boat or the little pink camper that, looks run down, but is stunning if you stop to look.
Yeah. And those neglected objects, they grab at me. They tug at my heart.
They have little personalities for sure.
They really do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, after our trip to Chattanooga, I don't know how many things I sent you. I still find things, like, especially living in a small town, do you remember the camper I sent you covered in snow?
I loved it. Yes. In the snow.
With a little pink curtain in the back. And then, I was going out for breakfast with my family and there was this abandoned blue motorboat. And I think I sent you that. If I didn't, I meant to. And so now I've got the Leah Giberson like filter going where I'm like,
I love it.
Look at that old truck, because there's just something. Yeah. And you want to know the story. Like, how did that boat get left there?
Yeah.
Like, who owned that? And
exactly.
Why is it there?
Right. I love that. And that's one of my favorite things when somebody says that it, you know, after seeing my work, that they look at things differently and that they see even the same, you know, they maybe a drive that they do every day, they'll see things that they haven't seen before.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And, there's things that I would drive by all the time that suddenly I noticed. And yeah. So do you find that, I was talking to Trey Spiegel. You met Trey in San Francisco, right? Yeah, he's so great. And he had said when he discovered the paint by number thing, because he was given 200 paint by numbers by a friend that had passed away, his wife gave them to him. He said just something clicked in him and he was like, he could see 20 years of work in front of him.
Yeah.
He just knew. Absolutely. Yeah. And so is that how you feel?
That is exactly. So I probably really got going with this kind of on this path in 2005, 2006, mm-hmm. when I was part of a couple of group shows just locally. And I remember feeling exactly that thought, like I could do, it just felt like this rich mine that I had unearthed.
Yeah, that you could tap forever.
Yeah.
And so I know that because you are very busy and you're showing all the time and there's moments where getting you is really hard because you're like, I've got my head down and, you know, you're working on a big show and you've got so much. And your paintings, like the detail is just, especially those silver stream, what are they called?
The Airstream.
Airstream. Yeah. Those things are crazy. And so how, I mean, it's a generalization, I guess, but like how long does one piece take you?
Well, these days I feel like they take longer because they're getting bigger.
Mm.
I was looking back for 2010, 2011, 1 year was 25 paintings and the other was 28. So that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's like on average 2 weeks of painting.
Wow.
And to be, you know, one thing is that they overall were a lot smaller. You know, I used to do
still
quite a few that were like 6x8 or 8x10 inches.
And what are they now?
They tend, so the absolute smallest I do now is 12x16, but I do a lot that are in the 16 to 20 to 24x36. And they're just way more detailed. I'm kind of, especially with the Airstreams, I've been kind of, I feel like it's like Alice in Wonderland and walking into the looking glass, like with the reflections, just getting deeper and deeper into the world that exists in the reflection.
Mm-hmm.
So the space around the object is almost becoming less, you know, there's less focus on that space.
Yeah.
And in fact, I'm working on some pieces now that are they're almost more abstracted because they're just in the reflection.
Oh, that's cool.
It doesn't have any of the surrounding.
Are
scene.
Those on your site yet?
No, they're not finished yet.
Ooh, very exciting. Can you send some to me when you're done?
I certainly will.
I'll do a post. I always do a post with the podcast too. So I'll put up all the things that we're talking about. So if there's any sneak peeks of anything, feel free to send them over. And so I have this question basically just so we can talk about this one thing so that I can put them in my post. I think it was right after Chattanooga, you got called, I think, by an ad agency, which is very mm-hmm. full circle to go back around to your agency days.
Yep.
And you were asked to do labels, right? For, was it a line of beer?
Yeah, for New Belgium, for most, it's the majority of their beer.
Are so cool.
Thank you. So really have to thank you though, because I feel like there are a few kind of art angels I've had along the way, but my goodness, I'll get teary-eyed. Like you really have changed my life. Like
What?
If they found me on your site.
Oh, I don't know if I knew that.
Yeah. And that they have been just, so the ad agency found me, and then they presented my work with a few other people's work. And then New Belgium chose me to be the illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a dream client. They are lovely to work with, and it has changed. It has just changed a lot of things for me.
Wow, so, that's amazing.
Yes, it is amazing. So thank you.
I love thank being you. An angel. I didn't even know.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. I mean, quite a few years ago, I was thinking, you know, because when I first got into this, trying to make a living as a painter full time, it was a slow start, and I was so one thing that happened was I was doing freelance, and I had a big project lined up that, again, another dip in the economy around 2008,
mm-hmm.
right? 2008, 2007, 2008. Yep.
Yep.
And my third child was a baby then. So that was unfortunate timing. But so this big freelance project went away, and I decided, a cousin of mine suggested that I put some of my images up on Etsy and sell prints of them.
Oh, and yes, I know. This is such a good story.
That was early 2008. And I, you know, I had nothing else going on. I had during the, you know, baby's nap time, it became my project that I would work on. And about a week after setting up my Etsy shop, I had my first sale to somebody in London, which just blew my mind, because all the other, like, I had been in group shows in Boston, but, you know, maybe 100 people might see the work. And this just was so crazy to me that somebody in England would see the work and buy it. And even though it was only a, you know, very affordable print, it still was like, just blew me away.
Mm-hmm. That was the golden time of Etsy when, when the right people got on there at the very beginning and just went gangbusters.
It was really exciting. And
didn't something happen crazy with West Elm?
Yes. Yes. I don't remember. I think that was like in 2010 or 2011. They started a thing where they would feature an Etsy artist or a few Etsy artists each season.
Mm-hmm.
And they had me in their catalog that came out in April. And I had no idea what I was up for or in for. So they were not selling my work, but they were featuring it.
Right.
And they had two prints that they showed in their catalog online and also in print. And when when it came out, I just, all of a sudden, it was just like this waterfall of orders. Like, I was not prepared at all. And it was the beginning of my kid's school vacation. And
we
had just like gone to DC for the week. And I was like, it was insane. Every couple minutes I would get another order and have to relist the, you know, the print.
And then all the packing.
Yes. So it took me a little while to get through that. And I don't sell prints at that rate anymore.
I remember you telling me that story over dinner in Chattanooga, and I was just like, the power of those things. The same thing happened. A similar thing happened to Holly Chastain. Because she went on to Etsy around the same time as you, and she was featured on one of those. Remember they used to do those videos?
Yeah. Yep.
And things just went crazy for her too. And so it was just such sweet timing back then, you know?
Yeah.
And so do you think that that's sort of what made being a full-time artist possible for you?
Oh, it definitely gave me this kind of momentum that made it possible. Yeah. And made me feel like it was possible too. It was very encouraging to get that kind of response.
And so now what do you think is next?
Well, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Because so I'm still doing the beer labels. The first year in 2013, that was like the big push where I think I did 13 labels for them.
Wow.
And during that time, I'd say even in 2012, I was kind of burning out a bit with my show schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, and then there was some stuff going on with some stuff in the family that I just had to really focus on. And I really, 2014 was kind of the year I said no to a lot of things,
mm-hmm.
and just had to kind of reset, regroup, and pull back a bit. Because I mean, 28 paintings, 25 paintings in a year, I just, you know, there was a part of me that felt like I was just I was starting to lose some of the joy in it, and just it felt like I had to crank it out for, you know.
I remember that. I remember talking to you a few times during that, and that's what it seemed like. It was like, can't talk, head down, got to get these things done for this show, you know.
Yep.
And
exactly.
Yeah, which is, I mean, fantastic that you're having shows and that people are wanting this work and you've got this demand. But at the same time, it's like, if you don't say no to some stuff and pull back a little bit, you're going to lose that joy.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's a hard balance to figure out.
Yeah.
Because if you say no too many times, there's also the, you know, you run the risk of somebody not calling back.
Mm-hmm. Or not following up to get you to be on the podcast.
Right. Touche. But I also, you know, I also had to sort of reevaluate, or not even reevaluate, but just go back to what, you know, my priorities are. And I was, in addition to everything else, started having a lot of like chronic pain issues with that I think most artists go through.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, everything really from carpal tunnel, tennis elbow, all the way up rotator cuff. And like,
wow, there's a sign.
Yeah.
Does your neck get sore?
Oh yeah.
I always imagine your neck being really sore.
Although I used to work on a flat surface, like on a, with everything lying flat on a desk. And then once I switched to an easel, my neck is, that's better.
Yeah. You know, I think that's why I think that, because I've seen pictures of your studio with everything flat on a desk and there's so much detail in your work that as soon as I saw it, I was like, my God, she must have a sore neck.
Well, now it's upright. And so now
that's
it's
good.
More like my shoulder hurts.
And right.
My wrist.
Right.
So I can't crank it out in that same way, you know, I just have to pace myself a little bit more. And the work is so detailed that that it also takes longer with that. So I have, you know, I'm looking at different options. I've been approached about different licensing opportunities. And, you know, I was listening to one of your podcasts. The woman from Chronicle, who's no longer at Chronicle.
Oh yeah, Kate. Like, yeah, she's my editor.
Oh my gosh, what I feel like I need is somebody to kind of like help me, almost like an art therapist, but not like your regular kind of art therapist. But somebody to sort of help me figure out, like, it's more like maybe an art therapist, project manager, coach, something to figure out where to focus my time and energy, because painting is what I mostly want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can have somebody else deal with the prints.
Yeah. I think Lisa Congdon just hired somebody.
The thing is, I don't have space for anybody in my space.
Right.
Like I also heard on one of your podcasts, somebody talking about having a 3,000 square foot studio, which I just had to laugh out loud about, because Our apartment is 1,200 square feet. So that's our apartment.
I know. I was like, Bobby, I don't know if we can tell people about your 3,000 square foot, beautiful, insane-o studio. And she's like, yeah, I know. Yeah. It's, yeah, people I don't know. I know. I couldn't even believe, like, I saw the picture on Instagram before I talked to her, and I was like, wait. Hold on.
This is not a relatable piece of information.
Okay, everybody, back to your 3,000 square foot studios. I know. Right. And she knows it's crazy too, but yeah, I know.
I know. I was just laughing because I actually got the tape measure out and figured out that the corner. So Jason and I share a room that we both work out of in our 1,200 square foot apartment. And my painting corner is probably about 10 square feet, something like that.
Same. So, did you hear Jessica Bell talking about her studio that was 100 square foot little cube?
Yeah.
With no roof. It just has a tarp over it.
It did. So I do have a roof.
Oh, that's good. See, you were ahead of where Jessica Bell was a few years back.
Yeah. I've got a roof and I have great light. We're on the third floor and we have beautiful southern exposure light. So
that's good. Take your blessings where you can.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Well, I don't know. I don't have an answer for you because I'm like, I have way too many things going and I need help too. And I don't even know how to go about doing that. So I can offer you nothing here.
Right.
Except emotional support to say, again, I feel like I'm talking to me. So our parallel little worlds will continue. The only thing I have left is the speed round.
Okay.
Okay, you ready? So
I should warn you, I am not speedy with these things, and I rarely give a concise answer. Usually I go into the murk.
Okay, space. Well, two of these are quick. Well, you can never know.
Okay.
Yeah, you could pass. Yeah, they might go Leah Giberson-ish, and you might need to tangent. Who knows? Ready?
Okay. Ready.
Trucks or campers?
Campers.
See? Oh, good for you. Beach or snow?
Oh.
Because I know you love both.
I love both. I love both. Like, love both.
Like, but equal.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, we're going to leave it at that. Okay. The best craft you ever made as a kid? Because I knew about that barn going into this.
But okay. Well, I didn't make the barn as a kid.
No, I know. But like, no. Okay. Good things happen in there. There was weaving and glass blowing and I don't know.
Oh, that's right. Right. Yes. Oh, goodness.
Did your dad ever let you blow glass?
Oh, yeah. That was horrible. I felt so bad. It was horrible. He made little blowpipes for my sisters and me. But that meant we had to be even closer.
Oh,
to the furnace.
My God.
And it was really hot. And I felt like, I still feel like we let him down because he really wanted us to be like his glass blowing companions. And yeah, none of us did that. We're all artists, but none of us went into glass. I made a cool giraffe out of paper mache that I was very proud of.
Really?
How old are you?
That's so cute.
I was probably 8 and I really thought it looked like so realistic.
Do you have photos of it?
No. Oh, I doubt it. But I do remember I kept it for a while and then came across it when I was like in middle school and I just threw it out because I was appalled.
Oh no. That's like the chronic artist problem. When we were moving from Vancouver to our town now, I had so much art from so many years and I was like, I am not paying to move this crap.
Like, no kidding.
And so I was like, I'm just going to throw it away. So we'd gotten a big dumpster thing to toss stuff. And so I was taking these paintings out to throw them away. And Greg, my husband, was like, oh my God, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm getting rid of this shit. Like, I don't need these. They're so ugly and whatever. And he's like, you can't, like, he won't let me throw away any of my art. He's like, this is going to be in a retrospective one day. God love him. And so I would wait until the dark of night. He would be putting Charlie to bed or something. And I would sneak out and throw them away into the dumpster. And then I found out that my neighbors took most of them.
Oh,
so none weird. Of them actually went to the garbage can. My neighbors were like, what? And so many people were like, I have this painting and I have this one. And I was like, okay, well, that's good. At least they're not in my house or the moving truck.
Yeah, that's good. You don't have to store them.
No. So then the rest of them that he wouldn't let me throw away, I basically did a fake art show in our little living room of our townhouse. And I had everybody in the complex came over and I just lined everything up. And I told everyone from Charlie's kindergarten, all the moms, come and take whatever you want. And they just came and they loaded up on stuff and left and they took everything.
So, well, that's nice.
No, it was good. Yeah. It was kind of a win-win. Like it was crap I didn't want and they were happy to take it.
I brought a stack of like prints that had little, they were seconds. Like they weren't, you know, they have to be perfect to sell them.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, these were just the prints I sell on Etsy. But they had little defects, like maybe I, you know, numbered them wrong or there was a little dot. I have a stack of them. I have more than a stack really up in the attic. But I brought them to my daughter's after school program thinking they could do some like exquisite corpse thing with them and like make them into something else. And then I found out that a bunch of people took them home and just... them.
They were like, score.
Yeah.
And I thought, that was the deal. That is awesome. That's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Once again, hello, me. Okay. And then final question.
Yeah.
If you could have a show anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Ooh, I didn't think you'd ask that. you know what? I would go back to San Francisco probably. I love San Francisco. So much.
Well, you must have had so many shows there.
I've had two.
Was that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, but San Francisco like galleries. Did you hear that?
It's like walking into a Diebenkorn painting. I can't believe people live there and they see that every day.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, I mean, weird things happen after this podcast. I don't know who's listening, but people are listening. And so maybe some giant San Francisco gallery will be like, we'll take everything, make 28 more paintings this year.
No can do.
Yes. Rotator cuff is out.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's all my questions.
All right.
How was that?
That was great.
See, you didn't have to say no to me three times.
Did I say it three times, really?
I think at least... Okay, maybe I'm exaggerating. At least two, and I think I broke you on the third.
Oh, and then I rescheduled a few times.
Yeah.
Okay.
But look, it's done.
Okay.
The other person, I'm going to out them right now, the other person that I keep trying to get who keeps saying no, well, there's two of them. Jennifer Davis.
Okay.
Jennifer, I know she listens. She refuses to do it, so I just keep bugging her. She'll do it one day. And then Lola Donahue. Do you know Lola's work?
No.
She's an abstract painter from Ireland. Her work is so beautiful and she's hilarious. I was in Dublin last year and met her and she will not come on. She has flat out said, absolutely not, will never happen. She hates the sound of her voice in interviews, like will not do it.
Oh, I hate the sound of my voice too.
Me too. And when I first started this podcast, I was like, this is going to be horrifying. Now I just don't even notice.
So no, you're natural now.
Well, it's sure. It's like NPR. Look out, here I come. And so I just have to break you people down.
Yeah. Has Sam French done it? You need to get
no,
Sam.
No, I emailed her too. Didn't even respond. is everybody listening? Jennifer, Lola, Sam, I'm coming for you.
I want to do a show with Sam again also. Okay. And Holly.
Let's do Beautifully Boring too.
And Mark too.
Yeah, we'll just take it on the road.
Yes. All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Danielle.
It was really fun.
Enjoy the snow. I'm jealous.
Thanks. I will. I got to go shovel right now. Well, thank you so much. And take care of your wrists and shoulders and elbows. And I will talk to you soon.
Okay.
Okay.
Good.
Bye. That really was so weird. At least three times I felt like I was hearing my own story told back to me. Oh, but I have to tell you, she emailed me right after we hung up to say, no, 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 it wasn't a paper mache giraffe. It was a paper mache camel. We want to make sure that we have the facts straight for the art history book. So I thought I better clear that up. She also told me that this conversation got her truly thinking about her work, so much so that she's actually revisiting her artist statement. This was the aha moment she wrote about in that email. She said, "What occurred to me in a more complete thought this morning is that while the shiny polished trailers themselves can be really glamorous looking, the scenes their surfaces reflect are what I'm most interested in. That's where the mundane and easily overlooked exist, or in other words, where the beautifully boring can be unearthed and explored." Isn't that so nice? Happy exploring, Leah. And with that, I will say thank you to her for finally saying yes to me, and thank you so much to you for showing up too. There will be more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then.